The interesting thing is boring is profitable. Mm-hmm. Boring is profitable and boring is predictable. So you've got a level of predictability here, and the multifamily communities here are, like I said, boring. But as one of my investors said to me, give me boring any day because it does very, very good.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Darren Garman. Darren, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, hello. Great being here and great talking with you today. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm excited to share some of your story with the listeners. You have a long-standing history in real estate, over 30 years of being in this commercial real estate space, which is very valuable in this day and age. So Darren, why don't you start us off by taking us back in time and telling us what drew you into the commercial real estate space?
Yeah. Now, you know, back then the hairline was not as back as far, the gray hair was not as gray, you know. So I started in the real estate business, really focusing on multifamily as a real estate broker. So you go back 32, 33 years, and I decided to get into the real estate business with I had a degree in criminology from college, by the way, and thought I was going to be one of these, you know, really cool guys on TV and CSI FBI shows. You know, I thought that's what was going to happen. Uh-huh. And turned out that wasn't going to be the case for me. So I got into the real
estate. Did you pursue a career in criminology or did you just decide?
I did. As a matter of fact, my first, what I would call real job out of college was I was a prison guard in a prison in Eastern Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so worked for the Department of Corrections. And I've got, you know, 3 hours worth of stories there, by the way, which would be interesting. But so I worked for the Department of Corrections and, you know, did that for about going on 4 years and figured out, you know, I don't really think this is what I want to do for another 25 or 30 years for, you know, probably some obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a bad job and it really wouldn't have been a bad career, but it really was something I couldn't really see myself doing for that long. But for a few years, there's this thought in the back of my mind, you know, you should get into real estate. Mm-hmm. You should get into, you know, maybe some commercial real estate or some multifamily real estate, but I had no training. No experience. You know, even though I had a college degree, I didn't take any kind of real estate financing, none of those kinds of classes. So I really didn't think I had the ability to really pursue it because I had no background or training.
So right? What was it, Darren, that just really quick that put that seed in your brain? Do you know?
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what it was. So in terms of me thinking that real estate would be a way to go, there were a number of books that I had read back then that really got me thinking about it. You know, there was an author and he had some books by the name of Robert Allen about how to buy property with nothing down. And, you know, there were a lot of real estate type of people back then that were putting books out that I had an interest in. And really, remember, at this point, I thought, God, this would be kind of interesting to get involved in. But again, I don't have any training, nothing like that. So I had like this limiting belief that I couldn't really do this, even as like a side job to doing the prison guard thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So one day I'm in the warden's office. So why am I in the warden's office? I'm in the warden's office because there was an investigation going on about somebody bringing liquor, alcohol into the prison. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's a no-no. You can't do that. You can't be bringing in beer and, you know, cigarettes. You know, so, but they're having this investigation going.
Like from a visitor?
Yeah. And so where they found this empty, they found a big empty liquor bottle by my office in the prison.
Okay.
So as a result, I'm in the warden's office now talking to the warden. Do I know anything about what was going on? So there's a book on the bookshelf, though, as I'm waiting to talk to the warden. And the name of the book is Think and Grow Rich. And you may have heard of that book.
Oh, definitely.
But it's, yeah. So it's sitting there next to me as I'm waiting to go in to talk to the warden about this incident. Interesting title. Never heard of it. So I picked it up. I started reading through it as I'm waiting. I got so much into the book, I actually stole the book and took it home after I got done meeting with the warden. And after I read that book, I thought, you know what? You really want to get into the real estate business. This is the best time. You may as well do it now, because if you don't do it, if you don't do this, you will be thinking 30 years from now, what would have happened if I would have done that? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really think of living with myself later in life, having that kind of thought. And I thought, I'm going to go for this. And if I fail at it, at least I know I did this, versus wondering what could have happened. So,
yeah.
So that's what really got me to finally quit the job, get into the real estate business, and start my career in real estate. So I started as a real estate broker.
Yeah, for sure. And just really quick, I just want to touch on something that you brought up, which is so important, which is this idea of limiting beliefs, which, you know, I mean, I've had limiting beliefs in my life too. The problem is I didn't know that I had limiting beliefs until after I had overcome them, you know. So yeah. They're subconscious. And, you know, when I first started my entrepreneurship journey, I didn't even think about real estate, even though I had a long history in real estate. And I just somehow I didn't even think of it as an option for how I was going to be an entrepreneur. So just a note to all the listeners, like, we have subconscious limiting beliefs, and it's, you know, we need to be conscientious of that, so that, because there's always further that we can go if we start to break those down. So anyway, so that's a great story. You stole something from a prison outside of the warden's office. Pretty bold.
Yeah, full disclosure, I did return the book. So I did, but I took it. And you make a fantastic point, because a lot of the beliefs, we walk around in almost an automatic, I'll call it a fog all of the time, because we're just so habitual in what we do and what we think sometimes, mm-hmm. that we don't even know, to your point, that we're even having these limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes some things like that to finally kind of wake us up, mm-hmm. and get us to realize, yeah. And the bad news about limiting beliefs is they don't stop, they continue. So, you know, we're always kind of dealing with it, but to be aware of it is absolutely huge. So you made a really, really good point there.
Yeah, for sure.
So now I believe I can be pretty effective in the real estate business. And the only way I thought, which I didn't really know any better, to get into the real estate business was to be a real estate agent, real estate broker. Okay. That's the only way I really knew how to do that at the time.
Sure.
In terms of learning what I need to know to possibly own a multifamily or commercial property, but I better start as a real estate agent. So,
yeah. I mean, a lot of people say that's a great entry point, you know, as long as you have the mindset to eventually own properties, it can be a wonderful way to learn the business, make connections, just see how the market's working.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm like the poster boy for that, mm-hmm. for what you just said, because I started to focus on selling multifamily properties in the eastern half of Iowa. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I spent the first 15 years of getting into the real estate business as a real estate broker selling those properties. As a matter of fact, it got to a point where I would sell over 80% of all multifamily properties, 4 units and up, in the eastern half of Iowa. It would go through my office. Mm-hmm. And so we were just cranking out a heck of a lot of apartment transactions over time. But again, for 15 years, I didn't own anything. Mm-hmm. I just sold it. So it took me that long to figure out, you know, you may want to start owning some of this too, especially seeing what I was seeing, the results that my clients were getting, Mm-hmm. And to your point, understanding the business now, having dealt with so many properties, so many different situations, so many different investors, and really having a great foundation for getting into the multifamily ownership side of things. Yeah, that was really a big help. But it took me 15 years to finally, figure out I probably needed to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and what do you think it was that kind of flipped the switch for you? I mean, was it just a gradual realization?
Yeah, it was really a couple of things. One was I wasn't getting any younger and started to have a family, 3 kids. And you get older, you start thinking about those things and how important it is. And the second thing is I had so many of my clients saying, why are you not owning some of this stuff? Why are you not doing anything yourself? Because if there's anyone that has really good access to this product, it'd be you. So what are you doing? And it took me a long time until that started to sink in, hearing that so many times.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, seeing the results and the success that a lot of my clients had over the years in the multifamily communities that they owned, you put those 3 things together, and that's really what finally got me to say, hey, I really need to start doing something.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's really awesome. And, everyone has their own unique path, and hindsight's 20/20. So there's no sense in like, any regrets. So that brings us to an interesting point, I think. And I mean, I know you have so much more of your story to share still, but tell us about Iowa. Iowa is not thought of as a hot market, as you and I have discussed, but mm-hmm. you're, I think, almost entirely invested in Iowa and know a lot of people who, making good money in Iowa. So can you tell us about that market and why you think it's not considered hot and how you can be successful in a market like that?
Yeah. And so if you and I were on the street, you and I are together walking on the street right now, and we wanted to stop 10 people just randomly, and we said, hey, where, if you had to invest your money today in a real estate market, where would you invest it? We both know, and your listeners and viewers know, Iowa's not even going to be, we're going to stop 10 people. None of them are going to say Iowa. And here's why. Iowa is very boring. Okay. So when you think of, and that's the reason why it doesn't come to mind, because when you think of places where you'd want to own multifamily, Iowa doesn't come up because it's very boring. So you've got a lot of agriculture, a lot of farming communities, and it's very low key here. So mm-hmm. it's pretty boring. Mm-hmm. Okay. But here's the interesting thing. The interesting thing is boring is profitable. Mm-hmm. Boring is profitable and boring is predictable. So you've got a level of predictability here, and the multifamily communities here are, like I said, boring, but as one of my investors said to me, give me boring any day because it does very, very good. I'd rather have something boring that I own than something where we're talking about how great it is 1 year and then 2 years later, we're wondering what the hell we got ourselves into. And those are his words, not mine. And so that's really how a lot of people see owning multifamily here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so just a quick point on that is, I tend to think of real estate as generally boring, right? Like it's mm-hmm. not, and that's because it's not volatile like the stock market. Like it doesn't have huge swings for the most part. And it's just not that exciting in general when you think about mm-hmm. what opportunities you have to invest. But then you take Iowa, and Iowa is like, I think like, what are the job metrics? What are the population metrics? Are rents increasing? Are you adding value? What is it that's working about these deals? And are the time horizons like very long? Or, obviously you're owning it. So maybe are you owning to buy and hold or to transact? That's a lot of questions. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'll start with your last question. So it's pretty much buy and hold. And, our buy and hold periods usually anywhere between 7 and 15 years. Now, that's not to say that we couldn't invest in something today and probably be fine if we decided to let it go a few, 2-3 years down the road, just in general. But it is longer term thinking, no question about it. In terms of metrics, job growth, what you've got here, and at the risk of sounding a little, it's just going to sound the way it is. There's a really strong work ethic here for the most part with a large percentage of the population. And when you've got the kind of work ethic here, there are companies that really want to tap into that and see that as a benefit. So I'll just give you like a couple of quick examples. Iowa is not quite number one, but easily number two in terms of home base for insurance companies. And so you look at places like Cedar Rapids, you look at places like Des Moines, a couple of other places, you know, the number one or number two employers are insurance companies. And we all know there's not much more boring, you know, than insurance.
Right. Insurance but is maybe more again, boring than real estate.
Yeah. I think so. Especially, especially when my insurance guy is talking to me. But anyway, so you've got that. And then you've got a lot of agricultural dominant companies here that are, you know, Fortune 500 companies, but their home bases here in this state leave a really large footprint. And so with those kind of employers, that it's things that are needed, it's not cutting edge. So of course there's technology companies, of course there's startups, there's those things here too, but you know, not nearly in the same volume as some of the other larger cities around the country. But it's that we really need strong work ethic workers, and those kind of companies love to be here and love to have their headquarters here. And well, and then here's the other thing. So you talk about rents. Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of to your boring point, mm-hmm. it's good news and it's bad news. So the good news is you've got a pretty predictable rent trajectory that you're going to see here with really any size of apartment, pretty much. And that trend is typically continues to trend upwards in terms of affordability and in terms of rent. What you don't have is we're not going to be able to rarely, you know, despite what the operating memorandums are going to tell you, rarely we're going to be able to buy a property and raise the rent 100% in the next 3 years. Okay. That's sure. just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of large jumps in rents, large gains in property values, will you see those from time to time? Of course you will. But are they the norm? No. The norm is typical, progressive, every year, predictable growth, predictable income, and predictable growth in those returns pretty much every year. Once in a while, if we get a big win, yeah, we get those. But it's pretty predictable year in and year out.
Yeah. And just curious, do you have like a typical rent growth assumption for, I mean, just generally speaking, a multifamily in Iowa, like, is it 2%, 3%?
I'll give you two answers. The one answer, the simple answer is probably around 4%.
Okay.
The other answer, surprisingly, is a lot of multifamily owners in Iowa, they don't do a really good job of maximizing the amount of rent they should be getting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you and I are to walk around where my home base is in Cedar Rapids, and we surveyed what the community owners are getting in rent versus what the market rent was, mm-hmm. you'd be surprised how many community owners are, if they're at market rent, they're not really as close as you'd think, and they don't have very many units even above market rent. Mm-hmm. It's just the conservative nature of the marketplace. So I would say we have in a lot more, and I don't mean this like in a blanket sense, but a lot more opportunities in rent growth and real upside just because of the conservative nature of the marketplace mm-hmm. and how conservative the owners are when you go in mm-hmm. and take over a community, maybe versus some other places where you got a lot more aggressive rent raising and increases in some of those things happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I think that's a great point. And, you know, 4% is that's nothing to, I mean, that's completely, you know, reasonable to be able to make deals work over, you know, a 5 year, 7 year. And also you can refi, right? Which I assume is part of what you guys do.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally,
make sure to go to luxcap.com, luxe-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, it is. And I like to go into our projects with actually a fair amount of equity. And, you know, everybody's got their process and their system of success, of course, but I don't like to over leverage very much. And my definition of over leverage is actually 20% down or less. Mm-hmm. I like to go in with around 30 to 40% investment and then have some money in reserves right up front. Mm-hmm. And that admittedly affects return a little bit because you're not using as much of that leverage as you probably could. But in terms of building that equity and having that equity base a little bit faster as a result, because you're putting a lot of it in up front versus waiting for the property to appreciate and that loan principal to go down, you're able to pull money out faster to do some more expansion if that's what you choose to do so.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Cool. Well, yeah, thanks for explaining a bit about the Iowa market. I think it's really important to consider all the different markets that we have. So I know also, Darren, that you guys have had some quite an experience with weather events over the last year. And I think it's important to try to understand and wrap our heads around what could happen from a, you know, an intense weather event. And I'd love to get your take on, you know, what went down, how it's going with the insurance companies, and, you know, what your takeaways and lessons are for the future.
So great question. So we had here a weather event about a year ago, and it's called a derecho. Now, I've never heard of a derecho before. And in Iowa, it's quite common to have thunderstorms, tornadoes, you know, blizzards, ice storms. So that's all, you get kind of used to that living here. But a derecho is basically a straight line wind storm of winds in excess of 100 miles an hour for an extended period of time. And they're very rare, as I found out, because I've lived here all my life, never been a part of a storm like this. But when you have a storm like that covers basically half of the state, so think of half of the state where you live right now, and there's 140 mile an hour winds that go through half of that state continuously for about 45 minutes. And then the damage that causes. Well, I can tell you, owning the amount of apartment communities that we do, and just from a number of properties that we do, we always have, I shouldn't say always, but at least once a year, we have a property casualty insurance situation. Something happens where we have to file a claim somewhere, sure. Just by virtue of how much property we own. But I've never in 30 plus years ever thought that we would have every single one of our properties have damage all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what a derecho does? It damages all of your properties at once, if you have them within, let's just say, a geographical region, and ours were within half of the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was a massive event. So we had to file 28 insurance claims all at one time. We had damage.
And I'm sure all the insurance companies were just dealing with insurance claims, you know, from so many people.
Yeah. And so just to give you an idea about that, we filed 28 insurance claims, and I decided to take the role of managing all of this, which sounds like I'm like a glutton for punishment. I'm not, but I never had this happen before. So I thought it would be a really good idea as an owner and a manager of our partnerships to get experience with this. So I oversaw all of that. And when we filed the 28 insurance claims, the soonest we had an adjuster out to a property, the soonest we had was a little bit over 3 weeks. That's the soonest that we had. Mm-hmm. That tells you how many claims were filed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And so you fast forward to today, just in that regard, we still have 4 properties that we're still either working on or still haven't had work done to as a result of how many claims were filed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an incredible amount of damage to be done across an entire state and just so much to deal with. So it's getting worked out, but not totally, not all the repairs have been complete yet.
No. And so then so I'll give you a couple of things that I learned really quick about the process.
Yeah.
That I think could help your viewers and your listeners. If you ever have a really big property casualty event, especially multiple properties, the things that I learned. Number one is insurance companies are not as evil as a lot of people think they are in terms of wanting to help and take care of things. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think insurance companies don't want to help. And they, so I can tell you my experience with insurance companies was really good. However, here's like the big takeaway on this. You need to remain the squeaky wheel and continue to bother them to make sure that you stay as top of mind, if that sounds like something an insurance company would know about, top of mind with them as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So that's like number one. Number two is there are two ways that you can, there's two ways that you can buy insurance when you insure a property. And this is important for people to know because it's a big, big lesson. You can buy what's called actual cash value coverage, or you can buy what's called replacement cost coverage. Mm-hmm. Okay. So without going into a big lesson, replacement cost coverage is basically they'll replace the property basically no matter what it costs, less your deductible. Mm-hmm. We need to rebuild, redo it, we'll do it, whatever the replacement cost is. Actual cash value is, well, we'll go ahead and we'll replace it, but we're going to back depreciation out of it first before we decide how much we're going to replace. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people know that. Mm-hmm. And the actual cash value premiums are 40 to 50% less mm-hmm. than replacement cost coverage is.
Yeah.
And so if you have $1 million worth of damage done to your property and you have actual cash value, they're going to come in and say, well, okay, we're only going to pay $400,000 of this because we're going to take depreciation into consideration. You need to now pay the other $600,000.
Oh, man.
Well, I can tell you, I know at least more than a handful of multifamily community owners that ran into some big problems with that. Uh-huh. Because now they've got millions of dollars that they didn't budget for, that mm-hmm. they don't have in reserves, that now they've got to figure out where to go, which usually means you either have to do a capital call or you're calling the lender. Okay. And by the way, if it's an institutional lender like Fannie Mae, good luck, because that ain't going to work. So just remember actual cash value versus replacement cost. Thank goodness we had all of our properties with replacement cost coverage. So we didn't have any problems in making sure that those repairs were taken care of.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great tip.
Yeah.
Important point. So
the last point I'll mention about this too is that whenever you have a large amount of damage to any of your properties, you want to make sure that you're overseeing and taking a look at everything that the adjuster is looking at and basing their estimates on. Because 90% of the time, not because they're trying to screw you out as an owner in terms of what you should be getting, they just don't notice things.
Yeah.
They just don't see everything. And they just don't take into account all of the damage. So you want to have somebody there, or you want to be there pointing things out, making sure that they see things. And you don't want the adjuster to call you and say, yeah, I'll be at your property tomorrow at 6. And you say, yeah, oh, sure. Go ahead and take a look around and let me know what you come up with. No.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. You want to make sure that you have someone at least available showing them everything they need to see. By us doing that, I know that we got at least $2.5 to $3 million more from the insurance companies to take care of and repair our damage versus if we wouldn't have done that and just left it up to them mm-hmm. and just kind of decided that we were going to pass that on to them. Big mistake. So I would say, make sure you do that too.
For sure. Yeah. Really awesome. Super valuable insights, Darren, for everyone who's, needs to be preparing for an extreme weather event because they are happening more and more frequently. I don't know if the derecho was like, sounds like that was something that, does happen. Do you know when the last one was?
Yeah, there was not. There hasn't been one. Well, here's the interesting thing about your question. We all don't ever think about this kind of stuff because it's so rare. We don't think it's really going to happen. I mean, how many times do anyone that's been involved in any kind of syndication or investment, do you really have these kinds of conversations before you get involved or even think about it? You hardly ever do because it just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
So the first thing I would say is at least think about it as a possibility. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, the last time we had something like that happen here was over 100 years ago. And more than likely, it's probably not going to happen for another 100+ years, more than likely. But in terms of either yourself or the people that are, I call it running the show for these syndications, they at least need to be thinking and planning on some of the just in case things. Because as we found out with a lot of multifamily owners around here, if they didn't, they ran into some problems. Yeah. And that then dribbles down to those people that own them. And you certainly don't want to be getting those phone calls and be surprised, because surprises aren't fun for anybody. So just at least something to keep in mind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we wrap up, Darren, I've been meaning to ask you to, if there's like, you know, you said that you could speak for 3 hours on, you know, some experiences that you have working at Iowa State Prison. Is there any story you'd like to share with us before we, you know, start to wrap up?
Yeah, I have a good one for you.
Okay.
So one of the things that I used to do is one of my responsibilities was called Pictures in the Yard. And what that was, there used to be a camera called a Polaroid Instamatic camera. So you basically could take a picture and the camera would spit the picture out and you'd have a picture right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the inmates had an opportunity every third Saturday of the month to have their picture taken in the yard by an inmate picture taking person, and they could get their picture taken. And a lot of inmates love to get their picture taken. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what was my job? Why was I involved? Well, I'm the guy that would stand there and make sure they, you know, there were no gang signs. They didn't do any, you know, they didn't do anything that was, you know, like moon the camera, you know, that kind of stuff. They had to like keep it clean. So I was the keep it clean guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so this goes on every 3 weeks like clockwork. So every 3 weeks I'd have a poster made.
Uh-huh.
I'd have it put around the prison, pictures in the yard this Saturday, 2:30 to 4. So this would go on first year, second year, third year, poster, put it up a few days before I'd sit out there. So this got to be rather boring.
Okay.
So let me tell you what I decided to do one day about this.
Uh-huh.
I decided to make a different poster. And I thought it would be funny. Imagine trying to have a sense of humor in a correctional institution. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be fun to have pictures in the yard this Saturday, 2:30 to 4, special guest, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. Okay. So I put this on the poster.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny. I thought the inmates would think it was kind of funny. I mean, I got along well with a lot of the guys behind bars. So I thought they'd think this was funny. Yeah. Right. So I have the poster made, pictures in the yard, special guest, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. Okay. So poster's made. I had one of my inmate workers, he goes out and he puts the poster up. So this was on like Tuesday or Wednesday before that coming Saturday when the pictures would be mm-hmm. taking place. So I forget about it. Poster's out. I'm back doing whatever I'm doing. So I come in Saturday morning. I come into my office. I'm starting to get some work going and the phone rings. I pick it up. It's the security supervisor for the prison for that shift, which okay. is the shift that I was working.
Mm-hmm.
He's yelling at me so loud, I've got to have the phone out here. And he's saying, Garmin, what the are you doing? What are you doing? I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? He said, I can't believe you pulled this kind of stunt. I swear, I have no idea what he's talking about. I said, what are you talking about? He said, get over to my office right now. Slams the phone down. I'm like, what the heck's going on? I honestly don't know what's going on at this point.
Yeah.
So I go over to the office. As I'm going over to his office, where the security supervisor's office was located, was very close to where the pictures in the yard area was.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, remember, this was still in the morning time. Mm-hmm. Pictures weren't until 2:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I walk into the office, still not knowing what's going on. I walk in. I'm like, what's going on? What's yeah. happening? He says, do you see the line of guys out here? I said, yeah. He said, well, for some reason, dummy, they all think the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are coming to get pictures taken with them. I said, no way. No way. He said, yeah, way. Now, how smart guy do you think they got this idea? So then he shows me a copy of the poster. I said, I can't believe it. It was a joke. I said, you mean these guys actually think the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are coming? He said, yes, and you need to go outside and deal with this right now.
Wow.
So I went outside. I gathered, there's probably a couple hundred guys out there. I got them together and I said, hey guys, I just want you to know there are no cheerleaders coming. The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are not coming. It was a joke. It was meant to be funny. It was done in humor. They're not coming. We're still having pictures, but I'm just telling you, there's no Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders coming. So I heard everything from, I told you so, to, I heard people yelling at me. Yeah. And, you know, people started to disperse. Of course, the security staff was afraid there's going to be some kind of a riot. They'd get pissed off. They'd get mad, but they all dispersed without any issues.
Okay.
So that story is so funny in so many ways.
Yes.
Because these guys actually thought not only were the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders coming to Iowa, coming to a small town in Iowa, they were coming into the prison to take pictures with them.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Totally. Unbelievable. I guess they were just feeling hopeful.
But true.
Yes.
But true.
Yeah. Totally. Unbelievable story.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, so that's my Dallas Cowboy cheerleader story.
Well, I'm glad it ended peacefully.
I am too. It was a good thing I had a good relationship with a lot of those guys. I got along with them. It might not have gone so well if that wasn't the case. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Darren, for sharing that story and sharing so much about your experience in real estate. Tons of valuable information and insights. Before we take off, will you please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Yeah. So you want to go to my website because there's some good resources there. There's free book downloads. And one of them actually has to do with what we talked about, what to do after storm and some things to put in place. So just, it's my name. So it's Darren, it's DarinGarman.com. So DarinGarman.com, there's good resources for there, absolutely free downloads, good for investors and multifamily community owners to check out. Good stuff there. And for more information about me and what I'm all about and what happens here in Iowa, you want to go to DarinGarman.com.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all take some time to check out Darren's site and learn more about him. Darren, thank you much for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's been great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.